I'm Todd McKay.
And I'm Franco Terrazano.
And this is the Canadian Taxpayers Podcast. We're dedicated to lower taxes, less waste, more accountable government. We got a few things to talk about today. First of all, we've got to cut government spending. There's less money out there. We've got to spend less at government. Aaron Woodrick, our federal director, is going to come in and talk about trimming the biggest ticket item for government. That's labor costs. We've got to dial back what we're paying for the bureaucracy. Number two, we've got a Waste Watch story. It's a weird one. And actually, I'm going to give you a little bit of a warning. If you're in the car and you've got some kids in there and you don't want that question, hey, mommy, daddy, what does this mean? What is this? You know that question? I'm a parent. I've gotten that a few times. It's a little awkward. There's some sort of explicit material. We're going to try to keep it tame, but there was an art exhibit in Germany that we paid for as taxpayers. We're going to talk about it. It got a little bit weird. But before we jump into all that, Franco, how's it going?
Oh, man, it's going well here. I'm recording in Calgary. Now it's the beginning of September, and it's still warm outside. There's no snow on the ground, so I'd say that's a win.
I'm a little jealous. It's a little drizzly here in Saskatchewan, but, you know, it's how it goes. All right, let's get down to business. I want to read you a quote from a member of parliament who's coming out of a meeting with the prime minister. He called his wife, and here's what he said. Darling, I'll be back home in the next election. I will be defeated because the prime minister explained to us this morning what he intended to do.
And here's what the prime minister remembers from that time. Quote, I said to myself, I will do it. I might be prime minister for only one term, but I will do it.
So you might have guessed. Those quotes aren't from last week. They were actually from a few decades ago. Reuters did a story in 2011 looking back at the early 90s when the Chrétien government was trying to get on top of that spiraling deficit at that point. And it's worth remembering the past because things are tricky now, and we've got to figure out a way to get through it.
Yeah, that's right. Not too long ago, back in June, the bond rating agency Fitch downgraded the federal government's credit score from a AAA to a AA+. And you know, a credit score for the government is a lot like a credit score for your family. So if you miss some credit card payments, your credit score might take a hit and you'll pay a higher interest rate when you renew your mortgage. So these credit downgrades, they're important for taxpayers because they might mean that when the politicians go to borrow more money next time, we could be paying higher interest rates on that debt.
Yeah, it's big news because Canada's credit rating hasn't moved down for a long time. It's been at the top of the scale for a long time. So it's a little worrisome to see it bump down a notch, especially because debt can get out of control quickly. I think a lot of us learned that the first time we got a credit card. It seemed like a great thing. Then it gets out of hand and all of a sudden you've got to sort that out. And the numbers back in the day, they showed that. The Royal Bank charts it, and in 1981, the debt to GDP was 29%. So if you look at the overall economy, how much it produces, 29% of that overall production would be required to pay off the debt at that point. By 1995, it had gotten a bit crazy. The debt to GDP number was 67%.
Yeah, the debt of the 90s was crazy. That's a good way to put it. And a former federal finance official, Scott Clark, I mean, he remembers going back and forth with politicians at the federal level back in the day, warning them that they have to cut spending. This was his back and forth with the former finance minister, Paul Martin, at the time. Paul Martin was saying, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. And then Scott Clark fired back with this. You don't have any choice, because if you don't do it, that means you won't be able to keep the programs you've already got. We're going over the cliff and we'll be cutting like you won't believe.
Yeah, I got to tell one more story from that time. Apparently, one of those early cabinet meetings, Chrétien and all of them were sitting around the table, tells them they've all got to tighten their belts. But one minister puts up a hand and says, yeah, you know, I'm going to need a little bit more funding for my department. And Paul Martin shuts that minister down. The next minister, I know you have to shut other ministers down, but my department needs a little extra. At that point, Chrétien just kind of loses it, looks around the table and says, next minister to ask for more money gets a 20% cut. Anybody else got anything to say? Apparently, it got pretty quiet. Got pretty quiet at that point.
Yeah, and it sent a clear message. And that type of message and that type of work really worked out for taxpayers because things were starting to get better. Remember, back in the mid-90s, our debt-to-GDP ratio was about 67%. And then you fast forward a little over a decade, and by 2008, our debt-to-GDP ratio was just over 28%. So there was some clear progress during the mid to late 90s and the early 2000s.
And that really shows an important thing about debt. Right now, all governments are borrowing a tremendous amount of money, so it's a big concern. The question is, how long do you wait before you get on top of it? You know, I think, again, we see this personally. If you wait a long time to deal with debt problems, they spiral out of control fast. But if you start making progress on it, it's always surprising at how fast you can start to get things back under control. So the question is now, how long do we wait? You know, Fitch is projecting that Canada's debt to GDP is going to hit 45%. The debt in overall numbers is set to hit $1 trillion in the next few months. It's a daunting task. That's a big debt that's getting bigger. But if we get on it now, it can be less painful.
Well, that's exactly it. And really, that was the whole reason why the Canadian Taxpayers Federation exists. Remember, back in the late 80s, early 90s, there was huge protests against the GST. And our organization and our early organizers realized that you have to fight runaway spending before it turns into higher taxes, before we really accumulate that debt. And, you know, fast forward a few decades later, and we're here again.
Yeah. You know, it's a perilous time. It's a challenging time. But listen, I think if we work together, we can make a difference on this. I want to wrap up this story by going back to that MP. Remember that MP who phoned home to his wife and said, hey, brace yourself, I'm going to lose the next election. That MP was Lawrence McAuley. He won that next election. In fact, he's won all of the elections since then. He's still a member of parliament. You know what? Politicians can do tough things. We need to push them to do those tough things. And we need to get on top of these, the spending and the debt, and start turning it around.
Well, let's start talking about how we can fix this debt challenge that we have. And let's jump to your conversation, Todd, with our federal director, Aaron Woodrick, to talk about our recommendations to get these debt numbers going in the right direction. And that's down.
It's time to take our deep dive into important issues. Aaron Woodrick, our federal director, is here. Aaron, what do you got to talk about today?
Well, Todd, obviously we've got the pandemic still ongoing, and everybody knows we're piling up a lot of debt. So we thought it would finally be time to break that taboo and start looking at some places to save money. And, you know, the thing we wanted to focus on was the single biggest ticket item in government, which turns out to be, unsurprisingly, employee salaries. You've got around 380,000 people working for the federal government, and that number is still going up.
You know, that's a huge number of people. You know, the population of Saskatoon's about, whatever, 270,000 people. So if you took everybody in Saskatoon, added 100,000 people, you'd have a ballpark of the number of people we've got working for the federal government. Obviously, that's got to be a huge bill. What are we looking at in terms of paying all those folks?
Yeah, it's important to remember that's just one level of government. So you still got provincial and municipal governments on top of that. You know, if you look at the federal budget, it's about $350 billion. A lot of that money actually goes to the provinces and to individuals. So the actual spending by Ottawa directly, it's about $150 billion a year. And about a third of that, about $50 billion, $50 to $51 billion, that is salaries for those 380,000 people.
You know, that's a pretty mind-boggling amount of money, $50 billion to cover the bills for the bureaucracy. That's a ton of money.
It is a lot of money in any circumstance, never mind right now, and it needs to be less. The bottom line is we were already running a deficit even before this pandemic hit. We had deficits. They were a lot smaller than they are now, but they were still substantial. But that means that we couldn't even afford it before, and it definitely means we can't afford it anymore now.
Well, I think that's a reality a lot of us are living with. I think, you know, there's lots of folks who have lost their jobs, and those of us who still have them, a lot of us have had conversations about reducing salaries and taking some trimming. So what are you looking at in terms of saving money on the federal bureaucracy?
Well, we decided to run the numbers and see what we could save if we were able to cut the number of employees by 15%. And then ask the remaining 85% to take an average 15% pay cut. And if you do that, it works out to about $14 billion a year that you could save.
All right, so let me play devil's advocate here a little bit. It's easy to talk about in the numbers. Cut 15% of employees, cut everybody else by 15% in terms of their paychecks. But we're not actually talking about numbers here. We're talking about people. Aren't you kind of being mean?
Well, I guess you could ask the same question of people who work in the private sector. Are their bosses and their employers being mean because they didn't have enough money left to pay them and they had to reduce their salaries or fire them? No, it's not mean. It's just a reality. It's mathematics. And it's a reality for the millions of Canadians who don't work in government and had to accept that because that's the way the world's work. It wasn't because their employers were mean. It's just because they didn't have enough money. And the point that I'd make is the same is true of our government. They don't have enough money and we need to look at ways where they can save some.
Yeah, this really is about fairness and about reality. I don't think any of us begrudge our bosses saying, hey, you got to take a little bit of a cut. We got to all take a little less to make sure that we can get a little further. That really is what we're talking about if we're all in it together, but government's got to be in it together with the rest of us.
It is. It's really just about fairness. It's something that's not controversial in the private sector. Everyone just sort of understands it. And yet when it comes to government, it's as if the rules are supposed to change somehow. I don't see it as being vindictive. I don't see it as attacking people in government any more than it's attacking people who work in the private sector when they lose their jobs. It's just an unfortunate reality. And I think that's something that, you know, speaking of reality, our government needs to really grapple with.
Well, we've got to be honest about it. I mean, what would you want your employer to do? Tell you everything's fine and nothing's going to happen and put the organization in trouble, or be honest and say everybody's got to take a little less because there is a little bit less. But let's look at a sort of another economic outcome here. What do you say to people who say, what are you doing? You put a bunch of people out of work at the worst possible time. How's that going to work? Well, what do you say to that?
Well, I'd say a couple of things. I mean, first of all, no one's saying it has to happen today. It doesn't even have to happen tomorrow, but it does have to happen sometime over the next few years. And no one's even talking about it right now. We have broached this topic because it's an awkward topic, but it needs to be talked about. Another thing you can remember is this is not as if you have to actually fire that many people. In some cases, you can achieve a lot of these goals by just not replacing people when they retire or when they move on. That's how other organizations do it. And government could achieve some of that through attrition. But I think the biggest point is that this is one of those things where the sooner you deal with it, the less painful it has to be. So you can take a little bit of a cut now. And I frame 15 as a little bit relative to what it could be. If you're willing to take a smaller pay cut and you're willing to let fewer people go now, it's a lot better than having to cut a lot more people later on. And that's what I fear will happen if we don't make any changes.
Yeah, at the top of the show, we were talking about what happened in the 90s. Cans were kicked down all kinds of roads and the cuts just got deeper. We've all learned it with our credit card. It doesn't get easier to get on top of it if you wait longer. Procrastination doesn't really work in that area. But you live in Ottawa. You live in Bureaucrat Central. You're not going to get invited to any barbecues this summer, my friend. You're not going to be very popular. How's that going?
Well, when it comes to the government unions, it's fair to say I'm never really popular with them anyway. And to be fair, they have a very different job than I do. I'm trying to speak for people who don't have a particular lobbyist speaking on their behalf. Their job is to worry about their members who are government employees. They're trying to protect them no matter what. And so my case to them is, look, I think it's actually better for your members if they take a little bit of a haircut now, because otherwise they're going to be a lot more at risk if you try and deny reality and just think that you're going to be able to carry on with you know, hiring more people and giving your existing members even bigger pay hikes.
Yeah, I think that phrase reality comes up over and over. I know in my life, I've taken a pay cut several times. Things go up and down. That's a reality in life. But let's talk about the disconnect in government. When was the last time federal government employees took a pay cut? When has a bureaucracy gotten a cut before?
That was actually a question we looked into. And surprisingly, we couldn't find any evidence. Our friends at Second Street think tank were looking into this topic too. They couldn't find a single case where governments had actually reduced pay.
Not even once, not even when Paul Martin and Jean Chrétien were cutting everything. Never once have bureaucrats' salaries gone down.
No, and that's pretty remarkable when you think about it for the very reasons that you said. In the private sector, we understand that there's ups and downs, and when things are good, you might be able to get paid more. When they're bad, you have to take a cut. That's not the case in government. It's only been a one-way street. They've only been getting pay increases. They've never had to take a pay cut.
All right. So then I've got to put the question back to you. You're pushing for them to do something they've never done before, take a pay cut. What are the odds you're actually going to pull this off?
Well, look, hope springs eternal. You have to be an eternal optimist in a job like this. But the reality is sometimes things do work out. And we've seen it's actually a Liberal government that got a handle on this. You'd referred to it earlier, back in the early 90s. It was Paul Martin and Jean Chrétien who really took on the debt, who managed to make spending cuts, who managed to get it under control, you know, within a single mandate. So it's been done before by a Liberal government. So there's no reason to think that if they really put their mind to it, that the government we have today couldn't do the same.
Yeah. And again, we forget how rough it was in the 90s. We've got some directors who were, they were probably in elementary school back then, but it does happen. The question is, when do we wait till it's way too late and it's really, really hard, or do the better, smarter, quicker things, even though it's hard to make some of those tough decisions now?
Yeah, and it's going to be up to Canadians, whether that comes in the form of, you know, pushing politicians without an election, or if we end up having an election, whether it's this year, next year, or after that. But the bottom line is, Martin and Chrétien, they didn't cut the spending for fun. It wasn't a fun exercise, and frankly, they probably didn't even want to do it, but they knew they had to do it. They had to do it because there was a lot of pressure to do it, and they recognized the seriousness of the situation. You know, the CTF was a big part of that that movement to get them to deal with it. And we're very proud of that. And, you know, a generation later, we're sort of back in the same situation and sounding the alarm and trying to lead the charge to say, you know what, let's grab this bull by the horns and start dealing with the problem now.
Hi, I'm Scott Hennig, president of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Sorry for interrupting the podcast, but I wanted to take a few seconds of your time to tell you more about the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. We are 235,000 Canadians from coast to coast that are fed up. We are fed up with politicians taking too much out of our paychecks, often to waste it on a bunch of pet projects, corporate welfare, and pork barreling to buy votes. We organize campaigns to push back on these politicians. These campaigns often include petition drives, billboards, media stunts, and more. But most importantly, they ask our supporters to pitch in and take action. Alone, we're a voice in the wilderness. Together, we're an army to be reckoned with. You can join the fight and sign up at no cost at taxpayer.com. That website again is taxpayer.com. Okay, now back to the podcast.
It's time for Waste Watch. This is the part of the show where we make fun of politicians for the stupid, stupid things. Not the debatable things, the stupid things they spend our money on. Aaron, you've got a wing dinger this week. What are we talking about?
I gotta give the disclaimer up front. Some of this content might not be exactly child-friendly. If you have kids listening, you might want to have them cover their ears, put the earmuffs on, because some of this might get a little bit racy.
Yeah, there's some adult content here. We're going to try to keep it tame, but it is what it is. Okay, now that we've got everybody's attention, what are we talking about here?
Well, the first item is something that the Fed spent thousands of dollars on. There's a Canadian artist who was living over in Germany, and she held an art exhibit, which was actually composed of talking sex toys.
This one sounds made up. I have to say, like, I've looked at the documents. I know it's real, but it's an art exhibit in Germany with animated sex toys. It sounds made up. What in the world is the government doing here?
Well, we should back up a little bit first, because this actually has to do with something called the Mission Cultural Fund. It's a slush fund that Global Affairs Canada has. We've done a bunch of other stories on it. Some of you might remember the infamous chefs flying around the world. Justin Trudeau flew an Indian chef to India. They flew chefs to a bunch of other Canadian embassies around the world at great expense to taxpayers. Anyway, this fund, it's been around for 4 years. Justin Trudeau brought it in, and it's basically been thrown to spray money around at so-called art and cultural events all around the world, all in the name of promoting our brand, promoting Canadian culture.
Yeah, and in this case, the particular Canadian artist in question is Peaches. She's also a musician, a visual artist. You know, we've got the name of the show written down here. I'm not even going to say it. My mom listens to this show. That would just get weird for me. But the show has sculptures and prints and videos and giant sex toys that she calls fleshies. And then they can talk and they've kind of taken on a life of their own. It's weird. We've got links to it. If you want to visualize this stuff, that's, you know, you can do that, but it's it gets weird.
Yeah. And that costs $8,800 from taxpayers from this fund. And you know, the Canadian Embassy in Berlin, which of course also funded by taxpayers, kicks some money in as well. So there's more taxpayer money there. And you know, like you said, we've got some footage up on our website if you want to check it out at taxpayer.com. If you want to see what your tax dollars bought, but it is certainly pretty racy stuff.
Yeah, not really work appropriate. Peaches, she's the big time artist here. What did she have to say about it?
Well, she's actually pretty graceful about it, and you can actually hear what she has to say here.
Thank you, Canada. Really, it was so exciting to have that support and to be, recognized so that I could do this work.
So that was Peaches herself talking about this. Peter Ackman, he's an investigative journalist. He did a ton of work on this, actually interviewed Peaches for us. That's where that comes from. Now listen, I get, art is personal taste, and I'm sure Peaches has, some big time fans who appreciate her work, but I'm going to go on a limb here. If you walk down Main Street and say, hey, how do you feel about, your tax dollars, paying for a sex toy art installation? You're going to get a lot of frowny faces. I think if you told those people it's a sex toy art installation in Germany, nobody you know will even see it. Yeah, I think people are going to have a little bit of a problem with that. But I want to be fair about something here. We're not just picking on Peaches. The Mission Cultural Fund handed over a truckload of money to a rock star I think we all know.
Yes, and I have to say this one personally cuts me like a knife, Todd, to hear this story. It's Brian Adams, who some people may not know, actually has a hobby of taking pictures. He's an amateur, or I guess aspiring professional photographer. And this Mission Cultural Fund, money came from that to pay for a very fancy red carpet event at the Royal Ontario Museum in Toronto. They have an annual ball every year. And this was in 2017, where Brian Adams had a photo exhibit. And, you know, celebrities including Prime Minister Trudeau, Joni Mitchell, Wayne Gretzky, The Weeknd were featured. And this was, as I said, subsidized partly with taxpayer money.
Man, rock stars don't do anything cheap. How much did this end up costing taxpayers?
Well, it got more money than the Peaches event. It got $51,000. And remember, this is a museum that already gets $27 million a year in taxpayer support in Ontario. Now we've reached out to everybody that we've mentioned in the story. No one has got back to us or said anything about these costs, except for Global Affairs, which continues to just provide us with a pretty boilerplate defense of this fund.
This one is, it's super weird too, not sex toy weird, but the Mission Cultural Fund is supposed to be exporting Canadian culture around the world. Toronto is not around the world. Even according to Torontonians, it's the center of Canada. Why in the world are we exporting Canadian culture to the middle of Canada in Toronto?
Yeah, say what you will about the Peaches event or the chefs around the world. At least those were those were outside of our borders. This was an event in Toronto. But I also think the obvious question, why does Brian Adams need the help? His net worth is more than $50 million. I'm quite certain he could have afforded to bankroll something like this himself. So, if we're even going to have a fund like this, which we shouldn't, certainly should not be going to subsidize people who are worth $50 million a year.
Yeah, the old cliche about starving artists, I don't think applies to Brian Adams at this point in the game. Money there makes no sense at all. Listen, obviously, there's way more about this. We've got it on taxpayer.com. Here's the kicker about the Mission Cultural Fund, though. This is the thing that really drives me crazy. If you're going to have a stupid slush fund that's wasting money, at least stay on budget. But in the first 3 years of the fund, it went $6 million over budget. If you're spending money on dumb things, at least, you know, try to keep the dumb spending under control.
Yeah. And so to be clear, the total budget over 3 years was supposed to be less than 6 million. And over those 3 years, they actually spent about 12. So they couldn't even keep the waste limited to their wasteful budget. They spent twice as much as they were supposed to. And that's the reason we've also launched a petition demanding an end to this fund. You can check it out on our website at taxpayer.com.
We'll have a link in the show notes as well. Sign that petition. Let's get rid of this Mission Cultural Fund. All right. Well, that's a wrap for today. Thanks for listening. And thanks to James Wood. He cleans up all of our edits, make this sound sort of kind of good. So, James, thanks for all your hard work on this.
Yeah, and please like, subscribe, and share the show because it really helps get our message to more taxpayers. And, of course, thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Scott Hennig, president of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. If you've got another minute, I'd like to ask you to think about the one person you know that would really enjoy listening to this podcast. Do us a favor and do them a favor and send them a quick note to let them know about it. At the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, we believe there is power in numbers. That's why we've worked so hard to build an army of taxpayers who are ready to push back. And we did it because people like you shared our work with that one person that they knew would really appreciate taking part. Thanks for listening, and thanks for doing your part to make Canada a better place.